What's up, guys? Welcome back to Kind of Funny's Conjuring Universe, Cinematic Universe in review. Here we are at the finale for now. Of course, one day we will return when The Conjuring, The Devil Made Me Do It finally comes
out.
Able to watch that. But until then, I, of course, am Tim Geddes, joined by big old Bathsheba himself, Greg Villain. The Nun, Elise Willems.
Why isn't it called The Nun Made Me Do It? Don't I get one?
You had a whole movie to yourself.
My spine hurts when I sleep. My spine hurts when I wake.
And the old man from The Conjuring 2, Nick Scarpino.
It's cold in here. I got to put more furniture in this room.
I should light a small fire.
Oh, God, it's cold.
It is what really cold,
What did
guys.
We decide Tim was?
Bane from Dark Knight Rises.
Yes,
the fire,
brother.
The fire rises. It does.
Why is it blue? That's what I want to know. His costume wasn't blue.
Yeah, that's kind of weird.
That's such a knockoff Bane mask. What, yeah. When you bought it, was
way
it like
$12? Way to half-ass it.
All right, guys. You can watch the show usually live on twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames, or you can watch it later on youtube.com/kindoffunny or roosterteeth.com. If you want to get the show ad-free, you can go to patreon.com/kindoffunny, just like our Patreon producers, James Davis, @JamesDavisMakes, Andrew Feisner, Jeremy the Zook, Zuccarello, and the Simply Sassy crew did. Thank all of you for what you're doing to help keep all of this going. I almost don't even want to start this off. This is such a bummer that this is the last time we're all going to be together. Doing
it's
this.
So hard to say goodbye. Ooh. To Conjuring.
You know, if I could bring to your attention the song Together Again from The Muppets Take Manhattan. Oh, you haven't seen it? That's interesting.
No, I it's hard to say because all the Muppets movies just run together.
Oh, my God.
Oh, hey, Kermit D. Frog here. I'm sad, so I'm going to get on a bus.
You know, I think if you did.
I guarantee if you did two it things. If we ever did a Muppets in Review, Elise would be on it, and Greg Miller would not be on it.
I'd send in my 30-second Andy reviews. That's what I would do.
Yeah, I want to know the biggest baddie from the...
Charles Grodin.
The oil baron. Yeah.
I love it. I will say, going into this, like it's been a good ride here. The Conjuring Review, our first ever horror movie. If you guys liked this, let us know in the comments what other horror franchise you guys would want. There's a whole bunch that I'd be potentially interested in because this was a lot of fun.
Oh, I was gonna say Nightmare on Elm Street, man. I'd love to go back
Dream
and watch
Warriors.
Those bad boys.
I just love Dream they Warriors, but Nightmare on Elm Street 2 is terrible. So
the third one was good, and second one not very good.
I mean, Freddy and Jason fight eventually, so we could just do them all together.
Dude, that's Freddy vs. Jason is one of those ones that I saw in theaters, and I loved it because I was like, whatever, 12.
You couldn't believe what you're seeing. Yeah, I remember.
Yeah, but I to this day I question, like, did a slug get giant and then smoke marijuana? Probably. And I'm like, that did happen.
I think it was a reference to the caterpillar from Alice in Wonderland. But as far as I can tell, there's no explanation for why Jay from Jay and Silent Bob is in it. Like, it's knockoff Jay. It's like Jor.
Jor.
Superman's cousin.
Everyone, we are talking about Annabelle Comes Home, released on June 26th. 2019. This movie is dedicated to Lorraine Warren, portrayed in the movie by Vera Farmiga, who passed away 2 months before the film's release on April 18th, 2019, at age 92.
Damn.
Yeah. Wow.
Ghost Hutton keeps you vital, man. Like,
spoiler.
Vital. It keeps you vital. Vital to the earth.
Yeah. Not what I meant.
She saw herself become the villain. You know,
did she?
That's some gallows humor for the kind of funny audience.
Oh, I gotcha.
Directed by Gary Dauberman, known for writing the Conjuring Universe, Cinematic Universe, horror films, Annabelle, Annabelle Creation, The Nun, and Annabelle Comes Home, which I find very little kind of like through way with all of those, but
some are good, some are terrible. There you go.
He made his directorial debut with this movie, Annabelle Comes Home. Dauberman also co-wrote the supernatural horror film It in 2017 and was the sole writer of the follow-up, It, Chapter 2.
I was going to say, like, I'm sorry, keep going with the facts. Are you good with the facts? Last time I cut you off the facts, and then Glenn gave me shit for it. Mm-hmm. Sorry, continue.
Budget of $27 million, box office of $231.3 million, a runtime of 1 hour and 46 minutes. A fun fact I want to get to early on, because it's pretty interesting, is the film was always intended to be R-rated because people kind of want that from these horror movies. And like the Conjuring universe, cinematic universe goers were expecting something like real spooky, right? Mm-hmm. And the movie did not get a PG, it did not get an R rating. It was getting PG-13 ratings. And they're like,
what are we going to do?
They put in the giant breast in that one scene.
Yeah.
Where they were just going,
that's. I didn't see that cut.
I'm thinking airplane.
It's why they added some fucks in it, and they added the illusion of Daniela getting stabbed. Mm. All of that was just to push it over the R rating,
that was enough.
It's weird, right? Like, I've never heard that before.
Spooky is the right word for this, because I think that was the vibe they were going for. Because this movie felt a lot more like a young adult, like, I want to say, what are those books that Cool Greg likes?
Goosebumps style.
It felt like a Goosebump. When we got to the ghost werewolf that looked straight out of a Goosebumps movie, yeah. I was like, they're going for a different vibe on this. Oh. Similar to how the other Annabelle was supposed to be like more action. I feel more action-y. Mm-hmm. This felt more like a kid's movie.
Absolutely. And at a certain point, they were just throwing baddie after baddie at us. And it felt like a house of mirrors, a house of horrors. It felt like more of a fever dream.
Yeah, it felt like a haunted house. Because I think when they start the movie off and we start getting like the hints of, oh, the ferryman. Oh, this. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, man. I'm like, oh, man, they're setting up the next wave of the cuckoo. The new nun, where we're gonna go, and it's like, oh no, they're all in this movie. Okay,
it felt like a greatest hits album, but if that band only had two really good songs, but there's like 20 tracks on the album,
like I'm like,
where are all the rest
of
these ghosts coming from?
Well, yeah, it felt like a greatest hits album, but you had never heard any of the songs before. Like they went straight from like having no albums to a greatest hits.
Yeah,
that's a great idea though. If you're a band right now and you're going to start off with do it, whatever your name is, greatest hits.
Crazy Town, if you're out there, you can try again. You should do it that way.
No, it would just be Butterfly over and over again.
But I feel like just based on the tone of this conversation so far, I'm probably on a very different side than most of you. But like, I think this is my favorite one. And I don't think that it's perfect.
Whoa.
I say it because it feels like a greatest hits in a lot of ways. And it gives me a lot of the hits that I expect. I do think that we have a worse group of the enemies than we've seen before. But that's because they've already used all the other ones and had too many spinoffs. But I like the idea of this being like a lot of the things that we've talked about these last 7 episodes or whatever it was are like talking about the location and getting used to the space and, oh, there's too many characters. This movie kind of solves a lot of those factors. And I think that the scares are there throughout. It's a little slow in the beginning, but the movie's not long enough to like drag. And I just kind of feel like this one delivers the most things I like about the cuckoo in one movie. Even though it makes me sad that I would have much rather 4 of these movies total and had them kind of build in a much better way as opposed to feeling as thrown together. This very much does feel like the Avengers style thing, but it's with the Guardians of the Galaxy instead of the Avengers that we've been building up. And that's giving it too much credit there. But I just think that it's cool kind of finally getting the Warrens in a movie that's not The Conjuring, but we don't get enough of them. And it's just like, but we get some, which makes it a tad enhanced. And we get a lot of these like moments that we've loved from The Conjuring where it's like there's the buildup and payoff of a scare. And I think this one has like probably 5 or 6 of them that I was like, oh, hats off to you. I like that. Greg Miller from Kind of Funny.
Tim Geddes, it's rare on an interview, but if we were at the table, I would have gotten up and come over and hugged you because I like this movie a lot. I don't know if we'll get to ranking at the end and have that whole thing, but this is a fun movie. It's what we talked about before of like, oh, does it feel like it's in the Conjuring universe? Bookending it with Ed and Lorraine, having them in there, and granted, having them be in that entire opening with, Annabelle in the car and him almost getting run over and the ghosts in it's all very much like, man, this is a side story to The Conjuring. It is not Conjuring 3. This is like when, it's like Metal Gear Revengeance or whatever, where it's like, all right, cool. We're taking a different interpretation of it.
Yeah.
But I have a great time with this one.
I think a movie is at odds with itself. And I think that I the things I liked about it, I wish they'd have just leaned into it and said, you know what? This is just going to be a PG-13 movie and it's going to be a little bit more about the story. I mean, the setup for me is fun. I like that it's the slumber party, sleepover, babysitter. I think the three leads had great chemistry together. I think they all sold it. I even like the dorky Bob has balls kid, which they kept saying. And at a certain point, I thought he was going to be like, stop, fucking calling me Bob Haslam. He's like, that's just my name.
You like man. Monster Squad where he shocks the shotgun and whatever really is instead of Fatso.
But I feel like they wanted to make that a story, and then they just like, yeah, you can just tell that the producers came in and said, no, this has to feel like it's more like La Llorona, which is like a serious, more darker, like way more horror driven movie. But this movie's not really that much of a horror movie aside from one of those two visual shots that you were talking about earlier, Tim. And I wish they had just embraced that, because I actually started this. I was like, oh, this feels totally different. I'm in. I like this town. I like this world they're building. I love that it's like mom and dad are going away for the night and then spooky stuff happens and we have to like figure out how to deal with that. And I thought I forget the actress's name, but the one that played the Warren's daughter, I thought she knocked it out of the park.
McKenna Grace.
Yeah, she was great. I'm a sucker for those types of stories, obviously, like Harry Potter, things like that, where there is supernatural things happening to kids is always a favorite of mine. But I just wish they had leaned into that a little bit more.
James raised a really good point about the way the daughter was written, which is that they seem to flip flop between wanting her to be afraid and then also being sort of this confident, I live in this spooky world.
Yeah.
We talk a lot about like theorizing on what went in, how this movie was made with someone locked in a hotel room for 2 weeks or what, with basically all the movies we've reviewed thus far. And this one felt to me, I actually kind of liked it too. I think that maybe there's a world where it wasn't so backloaded with stuff. Because I really don't, it really doesn't feel like anything truly happens in the beginning of the movie.
Or it drags, I think, a little bit.
It definitely drags. Tim, I think you said it feels like a teen spooky novel. That's exactly, I don't know how many of those you guys read, but it always starts with fun-loving, like, young adult stuff in the beginning. But then things actually get pretty serious, and it's like, oh no, so-and-so's mom is actually might die in the end. Like, it kind of, the last several chapters are actually like the culmination and the climax of that. But it did feel like someone turned in a first draft of this and it was like 38 pages and they went, we're gonna need to flesh this one out. Let's add the Warrens at the beginning and the end, and let's put in Bob. Sure. Let's throw Bob in there. We need a scene.
Bob,
we need
who
to do
never
some
goes
sort of,
in the house.
Yeah.
We realize never actually gets in the house.
We realize that there aren't any scares in the first 55 minutes. So let's do some sort of thing where like this scary bride runs into the room. Because like there is a lot of weird stuff in this movie where something terrifying will happen to the little girl and she'll be in tears, and then the babysitter will come in and be like, what happened? It's okay. Like, it's okay, we'll get back to it. And then the very next scene, She's like, hey, let's look at pictures of these monsters. Like, it's, and it is
so
kind of this
weird
tonal jump stuff. Like, it just feels like maybe these were things that came in
a
second or
third draft. I mean, her
performance
is great. She's great. The way that was written.
It's like weird.
I think they could have done a better job of clearing it, right? Because I do think that I buy it. I agree that they're like, these are big gear shifts where you're getting a little bit of that. But I get the whole thing of like, she's coming to terms with she has powers and she hasn't told her parents. So like the priest being over there is creepy and she keeps the cross with her. But why wouldn't she have told her parents? And then to get home and be like, oh yeah, here's all the paperwork. I snooped too. That's one thing of, okay, reading it's one thing. Actually seeing it happen, having the thing run at you and like, you know, do this thing and say to our father or whatever. Like, I get that still being scared. I get like, because even we see it with mainly Elizabeth Warren or Lorraine Warren, right? Where she's still scared by this stuff, right? She still has those moments, even in the car, where like, I like your doll. She clenches up for a second, right? And it is this thing. Nick.
Yeah. Oh, saying, so I read that as, she, you know, she said she sees things all the time. And so seeing the priest wasn't necessarily something that was out of the ordinary for her. But what I liked about the movie, and I wish they had pushed more into, was that it's kind of a coming of age where she's trying to figure out where she fits in this world. And she's just trying to get accepted, specifically by these older teens who are, you know, when you're a freshman in high school or like in junior high, like people that are juniors and seniors are just fucking like gods and adults to you. And that to me was kind of where I thought that the movie started to excel, was that she gets picked on. Nobody wants to come to her birthday party. She's got this
fucking
one babysitter
Johnny Rios over
who's
here.
Like, who's helping her out. And then this other character who's the brunette friend comes in. And you think she's mean, but she's not. She's actually just suffering because of the loss of her dad. And she's actually going in there to try and figure out how to reconnect with him and like apologize. So you've got a lot of deep things here. What I wish they'd have done was just embrace that and had, instead of the Bob character, I wish that had been the little boy that was picking on her, who then was caught up with them. And then they could have talked, like they could have had a couple scenes where she's like, why are you picking on me? Like, well, he's like, well, because your house is full of fucking horrors. You know? Yeah. And she's like, yeah, but this is where I grew up in. And like, this is, and then he could have seen some of the cool part of that. I don't know. And then got to know her and then come to her birthday party. Because at the very end, everyone just showing up to her birthday party feels like the teens paid them to do it with like marijuana, at least from Funhouse.
You touched on two things that I want to address. One is the priest, which I actually really, really liked those moments of her leaving school and the priest being in the background and establishing she's got these powers, she sees these spirits. I wish there had been sort of more of that subtlety with seeing this little girl who has this connection and is haunted by these like foreign specters. I thought that was really, really cool. Also, to what you're saying about the that maybe they should have pivoted and had the bully been there, I agree 100%. I think what we're kind of touching on with Bob and with that is that I think there were story beats that they wanted to happen, but they weren't really sure which characters they wanted to have them.
Yeah.
And I think I wouldn't be surprised if there was an original draft of this movie that only had one girl. There was not the babysitter and her friend.
It was just
the one babysitter, but then they wanted to do the father's backstory. They wanted to do that the babysitter has, you know, this girl that's the mirror image of her. And they felt like it was too much to give to one character. I feel like maybe that was a split that happened at one point.
Yeah, because that's a good point. Daniela, the dark-haired babysitter, right? She weirdly has more bonding moments with the little girl than really the babysitter.
And like, way more character growth.
They have way more to talk about. They have several scenes where they're just sitting and commiserating with each other, even though the other babysitter is supposed to be the good babysitter.
I think that there were things that would have been too conflicting with that character or overloaded, and they said, okay, we'll make it two characters. Mm-hmm. And they'll be friends, and that's how we'll handle it.
That's a really good point, yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting because I'm with you guys that like this movie feels in line with so many of the other ones where the characters like act weird for based on what we just saw them do, where it's like, why doesn't anyone in this universe tell people what they just saw? And it's like, it doesn't make sense, especially because like the little kid, I can kind of buy it with a stretch of, well, she sees it all the time, so whatever. But Daniela straight up saw her dad in the house.
Yeah, and doesn't say anything about
it. Why wouldn't you say something? And it's like, I know that you feel responsible because you kind of let all this crazy shit out.
Because she was lying to them as to why she was there. That's why.
I get it, but like at that point, it's like things get freaky enough that it's just like, shit, I fucked up. Like, it's not like, oh, I'm going to hide it.
The jig's up. This is what I did. I fucked up. Yeah.
I kind of liked this, though. I liked that she was hiding it from me. At first, I was like, oh, great, this character's just going to be super one-dimensional, and she's just going to go in there for a thrill. But once you realize that she's actually snuck her way in because she's deeply hurting and needing to see her father.
It's sympathetic, right?
But you're very sympathetic with it.
I'm with you.
But the premise is
bizarre. It's like, you're right, where it's like there is that twist. But like this woman, this girl, is mourning her dad and wants to see her dad again. Mm-hmm. So she walks up to a door with a bunch of locks on it that literally says demonology and witchcraft. It's cool. Like there's something about that I'm just like, it's so... No fucking way. Like, that's not how you talk to your dad, and it proves to be the case where it all gets messed up.
But if you're a dumb kid and everybody's painting, like, you know, I think the Warrens being in the paper and the town kind of having this moment of, we know what they really do kind of thing. I think at that point, you get into the idea of, oh, why didn't you ever tell, like, talking to the babysitter, right? Of like, why didn't you ever tell me what they did? Oh, you know, well, it doesn't, they're blowing this out of proportion. They don't really, it is. And if you're a dumb kid and you're trying to, and you haven't seen all the Conjuring movies like we have, and you're trying to separate fact from fiction, like, and I don't even know, you know, I mean, me and Nick went to parochial school, right? They teach us how to do an exorcism in a pinch if we have to. Like, does she have that kind of background, or is she just including all of the afterlife into demonology and yada yada?
See, I don't know.
I agree. Why don't they fucking talk to each other?
But they're talking about like the house, like even the newspaper articles, they're literally the one thing they're pushing is that in their house, they have a room full of all of the worst cursed things.
Sure.
And it's like, it's so weird and convenient. And this movie, I think more than any of the other ones, follows its rules the most. It doesn't follow them the entire time, but it's like, at least it sets up rules of the throwing up and the who's haunting who and like all the scares and shit. Like, it follows rules. But there's one bracelet in this room that isn't evil. It's actually kind of good.
And that's where I was gonna say, I wish they had explored that more. I wish that they would have kind of opened up the world a little bit more to say that just because some of these items were kind of, they should be conduits, right, for good and for bad. And I think she, I thought they were going to touch on that at the end, where she was going to give her the bracelet and be like, hey, this memory bracelet, mm-hmm. we cleaned it. It's got your father's thing in there. You'll feel him when you wear it or whatever. But no, instead she's like, she takes the picture out and gives it back to him and then goes, this fucking thing's horrifying. Let's put this back on the shelf. But I wish the daughter had been, I think it's a huge missed opportunity. I think the daughter could have been a lot more explained, because we have that scene, by the way, at the beginning where Ed and Lorraine come across the car wreck and we see the dead woman mm-hmm. that had just died, and she's in the backseat. She goes, I'm cold. And at first I'm like, oh no, she's going to attack Lorraine. She doesn't. Subsequently, all the other ghouls and ghosts outside end up attacking Ed. But I thought, dicks. I was like, oh, this is going to be cool. They can actually just talk to spirits now that are good and bad and kind of help mm-hmm. them go to the afterlife. That's going to be – no, it's just going to turn into a kind of a kind of horror movie.
I mean, I got that, number one, the purpose of that was they needed some sort of scare at the top, and they wanted people to be like, Ed and Lorraine are in this movie. So they wanted to use them for, like, a good moment that was actually kind of creepy. And then also to set off the whole Annabelle – it's weird that we have three movies at this point called Annabelle, because the doll doesn't do shit. Like, the doll is – it's like you might as well call a movie about alien satellite or something, because, like – it's just a beacon. And they do a pretty good job of style. I'm not criticizing the movie for that. But, like, other than bang her head on the glass a couple times.
We'll talk about that.
Like, she is merely a radio signal for creepy shit to come about, which
is fine. And
Lorraine
says that explicitly. Yeah. She says it explicitly so we understand why at the point in the movie when all these other ghosts start showing up that, why it's happening. Like, she says, you know, Annabelle's just a conduit for the other spirits, and then it like hard cuts to the title card, and it's like okay.
And it's so weird because this movie it's always so weird because these movies always feel like two movies in one. Where they said, I'm like, oh cool, this is going to be about Ed and Lorraine, because I know this from all the other movies I've seen when we spend fucking 15 minutes with someone. Those are the main characters of this movie, with the exception of maybe like Psycho, and then we just segue over to the daughter. If they had a second draft of this, I would have loved to have seen it where it's just the daughter and Ed driving, right? And then Ed has to get out, and the daughter sees the spirits and has those conversations. Mm-hmm. And so we learn early on that she actually has her mother's powers, except hers are amplified to an nth degree because she has grown up with this and understands it, or something to that degree.
Yeah, and that's so true. And I just feel like this movie, again, not perfect, but I think that we can critique the hell out of it and say like what we think they should have done. But for what they gave us, and for it being the I keep forgetting, seventh or eighth movie that we've watched so far. It's like the Ed and Lorraine stuff, it scared me in the beginning. It succeeded at like the subverting expectations of it's cold and all that stuff was creepy enough to keep me like on my toes. And the way that they had the like rise of him getting pushed, then the car almost hitting, it was like jump scare after jump scare that I feel like they earned because they got me in the end, right?
Yeah. Well,
but then they go back to the Annabelle stuff, and I agree with you guys. Annabelle's, it's weird, we're three movies in and Annabelle is what she is. But like, I feel like this movie does by far the best we've seen Annabelle do, multiple scares in a row. Even just like the blanket going up and Annabelle being next to the girl, and then the blanket rising, and then the real Annabelle being there. That shit was like horrifying. I think the only... scarier part that Annabelle's been a part in this whole franchise so far has been in, I think it was Conjuring 1, when the Miss Me stuff first started, the knocks on the door. You know, like that was truly fucking terrifying.
Yeah.
And it's like, I think this movie got the closest to that. It never had a moment that was that scary, but it had about six or seven throughout that I'm like, those are legitimate scares.
Yeah, see, to me, those kind of stuck out, where every time that happened, I was like, can we get back to the other vibe where it's like this kind of like more fantastic, like our fantasy movie, not necessarily the horror? Because I just felt like the horror elements were just kind of shoehorned in there just so they could call it a Conjuring movie or an Annabelle movie. But for me, it just, I don't think I hated this movie. I think I enjoyed it, and I just felt like I was watching two separate movies kind of playing out at the same time, and it's kind of unfortunate.
There's an overarching thing that I think is kind of happening with the cuckoo as a whole.
The cuckoo! That
every single time you add a new part, it doesn't really add to the whole. Like, I think, and that's kind of, I think what we've seen in all of our reviews, too, is we're like, oh, this is a really great movie. Like, hey, we like The Nun. It's really weird that it's in the Conjuring universe.
Yeah.
Like, other than barely related.
Playing an unrelated character.
This movie, I think, is the same way. I think it's a good movie. Like, if this movie had just came out, you'd be like, oh, it's pretty creepy. Like, some of it wouldn't make sense because you do need some context from those other films to really flesh out this movie. But there is some other things that, and it's, this isn't the only film that does it, that like really screw up other aspects of the franchise. Like the Warrens come off really incompetent and dangerous in this movie by nature of how easy it is to put everyone in their community at risk. Because they leave the keys on the desk, like
fucking room.
Like because they do bring in a babysitter, and because like if it was so easy for shit to get so fucked up so quickly, because they brought a babysitter into their home, like they probably shouldn't be living in suburbia with a bunch of neighbors. Like they should
and
be
with
out
a child,
somewhere else.
That they leave with alone, a child.
Like yeah.
it, or not it, alone, it's, but.
That's one of those things where if this is just any other horror movie, like 90% of horror movies with child protagonists from the 80s and the parents leave and then something scary happens, you don't have a second thought. But in this movie, you've already seen what the Warrens are responsible for and capable of. And so in this movie, the fact that they're like, we got to go out for the night. We got a babysitter. Don't unlock the door. Otherwise, all of you might die. Like is like, and the whole neighborhood, by the way, it's going to leak out into the front yard too. Whatever's
might
going
eat the boy
on
across the street.
And, yeah. The neighborhood boy might get eaten by a dog, ghost dog or whatever. Like, so like,
it,
there's
well, I mean,
so
it's
much
like,
stuff.
It's a weird thing of it. No, it literally proves all the parents, right. Who didn't want their kids going to her birthday party. Yeah, like, yeah, don't go to Judy's house. They actually do have horrible, horrible fucking things there that are poorly locked away.
Yeah. It's one of the, it's
a point to James though, about the whole thing of like the, every time you add, it's just taken away from the whole. While I agree with that, with where we're at with this franchise, if we had just cut everything except Conjuring 1 and this, I think it would have worked really well. Because this movie follows the rules of Conjuring 1.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. Like, this one's definitely more in line, for sure.
And it's like all the things that are introduced in Conjuring 1 are then followed up here. Like Annabelle is this thing introduced in 1 and is now like a lot more, like fleshed out is probably not the right word, but used a lot more in this. And it is in that house and it is in that room with all the things. Whereas all the other movies kind of feel like something happens and then they take the thing and add it to the room.
No, yeah.
Maybe if they remember to do that.
Mm-hmm. I will say, like you, Tim, I was really happy to see the Warrens. I love the Warrens, and it's a blessing and a curse because it was great to have them show up. But I do think that when you see them in the movie, it kind of makes the other actors pale in comparison a little bit. It makes, you know, going from them, because then you just want more Warrens.
Yeah. Mm. And then at the end, Ed pulls out his guitar, and you're like, did I want the Warrens? Yeah. You gotta pull out the guitar. Why?
I liked it because I thought it gave us, lowered us in. Like, we have missed them, right? And it has, I mean, they've appeared in the other movies, but it's always old fucking footage, right, of them trying to shoehorn them into this world. Having them be there enough to do this story that does pass it over in some regard to their daughter, right, of, like, her discovering her powers and or her abilities, and then also having to deal with all this other stuff, I think puts it in an interesting spot that I'm interested to see Devil Made Me Do It and what Judy's role is in that and what going forward her role is as well.
Yeah.
I like this movie when you just look at it from Daniela's point of view. Like earlier you were saying, like at some point, I think it was Elise was saying that you think that they might have been the same character in a draft. And like, I get that because she does feel like the main character in so many ways because the things happen to her and the scariest things happen to her. Her getting trapped in the room, it has so many moments that are like legitimately terrifying, like looking at the TV and seeing the future, and then eventually they build it up, and then you see yourself die, and then you see the monkey move and all that stuff, and then she gets through it. Like, that was great. The dad coming back and screaming at her, like, it was, we all saw it coming, but it was a good scare. And then the buildup of the game that we see early on in the movie, that keepy feelies,
feely meely.
Like, we see it in the scary room, and then like they're like, oh, well, let's play a game, and it's that. It's like, oh god, something's gonna happen. That is horror movie 101 to me, where I'm like, we know that when they put their hand in, something's gonna happen, and it doesn't happen. Yeah, and the reveal when the hands come out of it, I was like, that to me was the moment where I'm like, this movie gets it, man.
See, again, to me, those are, I agree. I love all that stuff. I love the setup. They weren't necessarily scary to me as they were spooky. And again, I'm okay with that. But there are very few moments in this that actually scared me. I think the dad, when she turns to the dad and his face is bloody, I was like, oh, okay, that got me a little bit. But I like the moment where the blonde babysitter goes, I'm gonna put my hand in this thing. And as she starts to go in there, Judy just goes and run and just grabs the keys. She goes, I got it. Okay. Like, we're just gonna skip that scare for now and go and go on the thing. I thought that was kind of cool. That was kind of a fun comedic moment, but that's something more I would expect in, like, you know, a PG-13 kind of spooky movie, which, you know, I don't know. I wish they had more of that. I wish they had more of a little bit more of growth with Bob and I gotta learn all these characters.
Bob's got balls, remember?
Bob's got balls. What was the blonde babysitter's name? Not Danielle.
Mary Ellen.
Jumanji. Was she in Jumanji?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, cool. I didn't know that. I just wish they had more of that. I wanted to see more of the characters because I think this was a praise that I had for the second Annabelle, where I was like, I'm interested in this story regardless of whether or not there's going to be some supernatural shit happening. Mm-hmm. Guy loses, you know, parents lose their kid and they adopt a bunch of orphans. That's kind of a cool story. To me, I'm a sucker for parents go out of town, we throw a party, we all learn more about each other. That's going to mm-hmm. happen kind of thing, like young adult coming of age stories.
Aaron Carter's Aaron's Party, man.
That's great tip video. Tip of my tongue.
Great video.
So I just wish they leaned more into that and gave us more. Because at the end of the day, there's like not much that happens in this. All they do is put the thing back. They don't have to learn its name, or they just put it back in the box. Elise from Funhouse.
You touched on, you know, the false scares. And my God, they went for it with Lorraine at the beginning of the movie when she's in the car with the map. And it's so obvious. She's holding up the window like, that was a fun moment. It's a fun goof. That moment was one of my favorite. And then also, it got mentioned earlier, I think you brought it up, but like when Annabelle, I was laughing out loud when Annabelle's knocking against the glass and opening the door. It's just like, it's like Team America marionettes. Annabelle being like, okay, here we go. Like that to me was the antithesis to making that doll feel scary.
Yeah. See, I don't know. Cause like, I feel like that's the thing about horror is it's so often funny. It's so easy to laugh at it to like make it less than it is. Like, mm-hmm. This movie, to me at least, did a good job of like building the fact that like this girl is in this room touching all this evil stuff that we've spent all these movies building up is fucking evil and about to destroy them.
What did you touch?
Them.
Everything.
And it's like,
I like that.
And
that's what I'm saying, is like this movie kind of feels like a sequel to the Conjuring movies in a way where it's like this, in more than any of the other ones, does feel like the Avengers moment of the cinematic universe, where it's these things that we've known are building up. And granted, a lot of them are newly introduced new guys, but it's the room that we know. And the room is what matters. And we are scared of the room. Yeah. So when Annabelle, this thing that we're already aware of and scared of because she's scary,
queen of the room.
She's the queen. She really is. Yeah. And it's like when we see her actually moving, like we don't see this doll move in these movies. So when she does herself physically hit the glass, it's easy to laugh at because it's silly, but it's like, it's also scary.
See, but the thing is, there's for that, I mean, I'm with Elise where I thought it was like, okay, that's a little obvious, but I guess what the fuck else are you gonna have the doll do? Like, try to pick the lock from the inside.
She hasn't done shit.
To me, the eloquent thing would have been if you just see the case and then slowly a latch starts to open of its, you know, its own volition. And
well, I was, so to me that one stuck out. And then I don't know why, but for some reason, anytime we have a character slowly moving in the background and we stay on that shot, it just never works for me in these movies. And there's a way to do it. I don't know how. I've seen it done before. I can't think of one. But like for me, it always, every time you see the slow character slowly moving in the background, you have so much time to realize that's just an actor in makeup that you're like, this kind of takes me out of it a little bit.
Compared to the priest standing static in the background, a little bit out of focus and just dead-eyed stare. Nice. Like that to me,
because you weren't sure if he was real or not. And then when she turns back around, he's not there. You're like, oh, that is a creepy priest. But priests are just creepy to begin with.
Yeah, am redundant. I right, Greg?
It's fair.
There is a really good moment that I feel like you don't see very often in scary movies, and I don't know if it was just me, but the bride with the knife.
Yeah.
When she goes after Judy the first time, like, and she comes after the little girl, it shows her moving and it has really loud sounding footsteps, and then it cuts to Judy and then it keeps the sound of the footsteps, but then the scene cuts away. Like, that to me felt like I was like flinching for that, because you're waiting for that
impact.
Horror movie shot where it cuts back and then you see the payoff or whatever. And the fact that they withheld that payoff and just left in the sound of the footsteps, I was like, that was actually a pretty subdued, creepy moment that would have, there's no way they would have been able to pay off that scariness. Cause like you're saying, like every single time you hold on it or you see it really good, you're like, I'm not scared of it anymore. Yeah. We just saw with La Llorona, you know, like.
Why was the werewolf in this movie?
I have no idea.
Well, they said ready that for the cuckoo werewolf movie, man. Yeah. Gen 2 of these things. Don't worry about it.
It's so out of place compared to any of the
100%. Every other demon you see that they like have some kind of realistic thing to, that there's not a werewolf.
It's also all CG. Though,
the other ones they have are so, I think they're freaking cool, man. Ferryman is so dope. When she is walking into the closet that is just a closet, but it is now like a hallway, and it's dark, and you just see the coins. That is legitimately terrifying.
There's one of the guys that looked exactly like Greg with his mustache right now, and I was like, "Was Greg in this movie? Is that why we're watching this?"
Didn't tell you guys, you know, coming up.
Tim's just trolling me the entire time, and everyone's
When she's going down that hallway to get to herself or whatever, the one who looks exactly like her at the end with the coins on and take the whatever she's grabbing from, I forget, and like you see the ferryman very loosely behind her, like crawling on the wall too. Yeah. This is dope. Remind me a lot of Gerald's Game. Anybody ever watch that? Netflix?
I do. I remember that. Yeah.
Remember that the guy there. Exactly.
It's with Carlo Gugino.
Exactly. Recommended. Go watch it.
Just a shout out to them kind of like having fun with the scares. We have Judy sitting there staring at this dark closet, and then all of a sudden Annabelle's body, the doll's body, just slams in front of her. She's like, take the doll, get out of here. And you're like, oh, that's kind of fun. A little bit more actiony and kind of cool.
Yeah.
And then I like the three of them coming together at the end too to try to close the case, and Judy kind of warding them off with her newfound, well, not really newfound power, the power she's had the whole time, but for a power that she's not scared to use anymore. I just was like, man, poor Bob. He thought he was going to be a lead in this movie, and he just got
he's held up in a chicken coop. Yeah.
20 minutes.
But even the bride with the dress and the way they built the dress up, like the dress was scary when Danielle's first in the room.
Yeah.
You thought that it's always in the shot. Like you're expecting it to move or something, and it doesn't. And then we get the backstory of the dress and the evilness or whatever. And then when Danielle is in the dress later, it's just like, damn, this movie's doing it. Like they're going for this shit.
Well, also, and shout out to them, because when they cut back to it after the bride has attacked, the dress isn't in the room anymore, which is cool. That's kind of a cool little bit. I don't know if you guys picked up or not.
It is interesting. This movie does a really good job of making sure to set stuff up, because like, we're talking about how kind of slow the first part of the movie is, and then it does a really good job of making sure to identify everything that it's set up and then pay it off at the end. So like, even when they're like, we accidentally turned on this film reel of Ed performing an exorcism. That's important later. Yeah. Like what you're saying about the Feely Mealy game, like all of the things that there are mentioned. Some of them are a little overt. When they go, it's the ferryman. It looks just like you. Like you're like, okay, so then the ferryman's going to show up, and then he does, and he's only interested in her. So like, some of it is overt, but other stuff is like really good about setting stuff up. And then the second half or where the last third of the movie is just paying off all of those things. So that, I mean, for me, I was like, okay, well, if you're going to pace it that way, I appreciate at least making it feel worth my time.
Yeah, it's definitely earned moments.
And with that, I love it because it's all earned, but they also do the horror thing of setting things up and not making every single thing end in the jump scare. The monkey is set up to be like horrifying at some point, and
monkeys are just creepy.
It never really is. It's just kind of an accomplice to the TV. You know, like the scariest thing the monkey does is fall off the shelf. Yeah. But like, we get like four shots throughout the movie of like building up the monkey, like doing weird thing. Have we seen this monkey before, by the way?
I don't know. No. I can't remember. I know we've seen the mirror thing before, which I thought was cool. They have that shot of the mirror with Annabelle reflecting in it. But I was going to say, just going back to James bringing up that stuff with the exorcism reel, I thought that was really fun. I thought that was really well used, where it wasn't like the end all be all power, but it was a weapon. Mm-hmm. She, you know, when she turns it on, it burns the spirit out of Daniela. And I was like, oh, that was cool. I mean, not exactly
way around it, right?
It was cool. Yeah. It was a cool way to get her all these obstacles out of her way.
Once you think about some of this stuff in the grander Conjuring universe, there's no reason that Ed and Lorraine can't just make a couple tapes, send it all around the world. You get in trouble, flash them one of these, and then it's going to solve the problem.
That's expensive, though. Back then, that 60mm film was not cheap, my friend.
The shipping?
No, you downgrade to 8, Super That's 8 fair. Or something like that.
I'll tell you, though, the thing, and you mentioned, Tim, that the guy that wrote this was one of the writers on It. One of the things I loved about that movie, obviously, was just the dynamic of the kids. Mm-hmm. And to me, this movie, I want to see them make another one of these where the same group of people, or maybe even more, led by Judy, are stuck in yet another situation where she has to then go forward and figure all this stuff out. Because I liked the mystery component to this, and I think they could have pushed that a little bit farther.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that's what they'll do in what's the next one called? Annabelle 17, Annabelle in 3D.
The next one, Nick, is Annabelle, The Conjuring. The Devil Made Me Do It.
The Devil Made Me Do It.
Is the next one.
Oopsies. Did I do that? The Devil. Did I do that?
Jaleel White returns.
Some facts I have for you guys. The samurai armor that features in the War and Occult Museum is based off Japanese mythology's demonic warrior, the Oni. It's also a PlayStation 2 game. Marking along with the Ferryman.
Bungie game.
The second cultural mythology entity appearing. The ferryman's based off the Greek mythological deity of the same name that ferries souls across the River Styx to the underworld, tolled with specific golden coins.
Maybe it's because I grew up Catholic, but I just, nothing's as scary as Catholic mythology.
Yeah, for sure.
I don't know what it is. It's the same with me when, like, again, maybe it's just my upbringing and my familiarity with it and just the fact that it was beat into my head that if you did anything, you were going to fucking hell. But like when we watched Indiana Jones, right? I love the first one. I love the third one just because I vibe so much more with that, like the Christianity and like those Christian like symbols and the iconography and all that stuff. It's just, I don't know, something more so permanent about hell.
This is a wide overgeneralization of many, many different cultures and religions out there. But Christianity so much focuses on like good and evil.
Mm-hmm.
Like good and evil, where I feel like some other religions and things like paranormal activity that come from other places are like, it's all together, you know, like there's bad things, but there's good things, and the bad things have good, like bad things also make trees. So like the samurai armor is like he was a warrior and he needed the strength to defeat like a bat, like it's like a good intentions, and then he becomes a cursed warrior. It's like, well, that's probably not going to happen to me. Not so scary about that kind of thing. So there's weird things like that.
Yeah. I just feel like once they introduced those elements, though, kind of I understand why they did it. And shout out to them. And I hope it works out because they're broadening sort of like the scope of what they can do with these. There's only so many movies you can have about demonic depression demonic.
Possession.
Thank you. I was going to say oppression, but no, that's not it. Before you have to like kind of.
Isn't this a joke in the movie at the very beginning when the kids try to make fun of Judy and they say the wrong word?
Yeah. Oh, maybe. Maybe.
Yeah, that is.
That's how closely I watched it. It just got into my subconscious.
Johnny Rios.
You're Anthony. You're older, Anthony.
Yeah, but I mean,
Anthony's based on a real character.
Is he?
Mm-hmm.
A real boy named Anthony?
With Judy.
Here we are. Wait, are we segueing?
There's no segue.
Am I getting this out? Is this a segue?
Like, I know I was using my segue voice, but no. It's Judy. Judy ended up like Anthony, Tony, or whatever. Based in this movie Tony. Is based on Judy's real husband. Eventually,
he didn't actually bully her
when she was little, and that wasn't all true. But like,
we probably
did he have great hair like that kid had.
We probably would have learned that, but we railroad Tim with the facts every single time.
We're the worst.
That was my fault. I'm sorry.
More facts for you.
Wait, hold on, real quick. Can you give me? Is Bob? Was he really the equipment manager for the local high school basketball team?
Oh, that was the thing. It would surprise you. No balls at all.
Wow. Bob's got no balls.
No balls.
Bob had one testicle and lost it in a freak basketball.
I did like the stoner dude who showed up for no reason.
Dude! Okay, hold on.
He came out of the closet to Bob.
See you later. What the fuck is going
on? We have a segment on this show that we don't always do, and we haven't been doing for Conjuring Review, but it's MVP, where we shout out the MVP of the franchise. Dude, of the entire Conjuring universe, it's that dude.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
It's like one of the weirdest scenes in the thing where it's like, hey, I ate some of the pizza. Let me give you relationship advice, Bob. I would love some ratio. Why is this happening?
He's essentially Pauly Shore's character from the Goofy movie. He's like the Leaning Tower of Jesus. Like he's like.
I love that. That's the one thing that Tim knows that Pauly Shore said.
Hell yeah, it's so good.
You know what else he said, Nick?
What's that?
Biodome.
Viva los biodomes. Did he actually say that?
The Jews.
I'll disagree with you there because I like that moment. I like any moment. Maybe it's because I don't specifically love horror movies. So anytime there's not horror happening in the movies, I'm just
Nick's favorite
happy.
Part of the horror movie is when they're making the cake and hanging out.
Yeah, that's father. Like to me, I'm much more interested in like Judy being unfortunately like misunderstood kid who's picked on. And I'm like trying to see her redemption arc or how people understand her a little bit more is always a little more fascinating to me.
Nick, I'm with you to that point of like, and I know that I'm high on this movie, but it's like I love that I was rooting for Bob and Mary Jean or whatever the hell her name was to get with it. You know, it's just like I wanted it to happen. She wanted it to happen. He wanted it to happen. Everyone wanted it to happen. you know? Mm-hmm. And shout out to Daniela being a wing woman, a little aggressive in the beginning. But like it paid off.
She got the job done.
She knew that both were interested, so we're making this happen. And I want to put on record, MVP I already shouted out, but I want to create some new segment. I'm just going to say my favorite missed opportunity of all time was in this movie of the missed kiss. The him going for the kiss and like her not being there for it. My favorite on-screen missed kiss of all time.
Wow.
Like, there's always the weird fake outs, the will they, won't they, whatever. That's not what this was. He went for it and she just didn't know. She would have done it. She just didn't know.
Wow, that's a hard
one. I believe in their chemistry, man.
What about in Spider-Man when Spider-Man's hanging upside down and Mary Jane goes to kiss him but accidentally gets his whole nose and puts his entire nose in her mouth? I thought that was
Tim.
What about that one?
What about that one, Tim?
That one won an MTV Movie Award, so I will not take any slander from that. That one best kiss, James. Yeah. Never forget. Okay. It also inspired a Spin the Bottle double. I forgot the fuck what we called it, but it was a truth or dare situation. It was Spin the Bottle and truth or dare. Do you guys please know what I'm talking about?
Please tell me you held Alfredo upside down and he made out with somebody.
You guys no, just, but I did overkill. Get to make out with Jennifer Huey upside down, and it was awesome. It was awesome.
The Heuser? Yeah.
The Heuster, man. The Heuster. It was great.
The Heuster. It was great.
Is it the kind of thing where you were like, you spin the bottle, but then it could be truth or dare? Is that how it worked?
Yeah, exactly.
I think you guys just didn't understand the whole purpose of both those games. They both have the same end game, which is to make out in a closet.
But it was a bunch of horny little 13-year-olds, and we're not even 13, we're like 12, and we're all hanging out, and there was no parents, and it was just like, okay, we know we're all going to kiss each other, but how can we do it in different ways?
Gamify.
You know what I mean? How can we gamify?
Gamify this.
Yeah,
that's true. I got my first kiss ever from Spin the Bottle.
Wow. That's how it goes.
What was the bottle's name?
Oddly enough, I think it was called Heinz. It was a Heinz bottle.
Oh my God, MVP.
Hellman's. Oh.
Greg, MVP, Conjuring Review.
Thank you.
I want you guys to know that before you guys got here, Greg did. He did the thing with this mustache that he's really growing into. And I don't know, maybe you guys were here for this, but I think we weren't live, so the audience didn't see it. Greg's had one of those long days where he's been on 15 pieces of content, and I respect him for that. But he did this thing today where when we got on, he was answering some emails, and he just went like the old, like the 1980s dad, like sigh so hard, the upper lip moves, and the mustache just kind of blows in the wind.
It's a mood, you know? It's a
disappointed Will.
Yeah.
Jen's going to see it blow in slow-mo. Jen is
so good on this mustache right now that it's scary. It's
terrifying for me, even. You know what I mean? Like, I don't like being a piece of meat, but
she's been aggressive on social media about it.
I know that move. Speaking of Jen,
the werewolf is noted as a hellhound by Ed and Lorraine, and like the French legend of La Petite de Gévaudan.
Oh,
is the monstrous werewolf appearing out of encroaching night fog.
I don't think he nailed it there. I'm going to be honest.
Of many local
you're going to tell me he didn't get all
wasn't
of that?
Perfect.
I think it sounds pretty. Like I was back in the French countryside.
Yeah, that's it. See, I'm doing my best. We're nailing it. But yeah, I wish the werewolf wasn't in this movie because
it just didn't look good. It's one of those things where
terrible,
And the thing is this, like I'm used to a hellhound being like, I don't remember the hellhound being specifically a werewolf. I'm just kind of anecdotally familiar with that from like the Sherlock Holmes stories, but I just remember them being very like hell demons or demon hounds. So the fact that it looked like the Goosebumps werewolf was just like a little disappointing to me. I'm like, guys, come on, we couldn't have found a different, like maybe watch American Werewolf in London to get a little bit more inspiration on how this thing could be a little scarier and not so freaking cartoony. But I guess when it comes out of the mist, it's going to be a little silly to begin with.
No.
I'm trying to sleuth over here, find the woman Tim upside down gives an 8-year-old or whatever.
Everyone out there, please do not do that. But also, it's like, you know, it's fine.
This is why we don't say last names, Tim. This is why we don't say last names.
She's fine. It's fine. It's fine. There's a whole story there. But
what I feel like we're haunted. This is the last one that we're recording, and there's been so much noise. Someone slammed a door. Benson's stomping around. Now a car alarm just is going off outside.
They don't want it to end, James.
They don't want it to end.
You know who else doesn't want it to end? Andy Cortez. Can we please pull up Andy's video?
Hey, interview crew. It's me, Andy, from Kind of Funny. Hope y'all are doing well. Sorry I couldn't be there this week. I was eating dinner at the time, so unfortunately I couldn't make it. But, I mean, we're here at the end. This is crazy, right? This is, you know, the very end of a long journey. And it's been a pretty wild ride, and I'm glad I could spend it with you all. So Annabelle Comes Home, right? I mean, this, what a great movie! What a great way to sort of to end the franchise, you know, the Avengers Endgame of the Conjuring universe, if you will. You know, when I think about Annabelle Comes Home, I think about, you know, Mary Ellen and Bob Palmieri. When they arrive outside and serenades her, but later attacked by the Black Shuck and hides in the Warren's backyard. I can't do this anymore, guys. I have a confession to make. I didn't watch any of the movies. I can't believe this. I honestly, I'm just really sorry that you've been tricked for this long. And you fell for all of this, and I blame myself. If you feel betrayed by me at all, please know that I'm very sorry, and I hope we can all still be friends, okay?
But, oh, okay. I thought okay. For sure it was going to be a picture of him, and it was going to be birth year to 2020.
Can we title this episode Andy Apologizes?
We'll have to do another podcast episode for that. Yes. Oh man, Andy, we love you, and maybe you'll be able to join us for another franchise.
Are we gonna allow him back? I mean, he just, you know,
I don't know.
He said he didn't watch any of them, but he got that one right. Time, yeah, he you know? Knew like the one with the wave, the tidal wave, and the.
I feel stupid.
I don't even know Bob's last name, and he knew it was Palmieri, apparently.
It's because he has the wiki.
Yeah, I was reading along exactly. As
then I think it's Palmer.
So...
Yeah, it's Palmer. No, it is Palmieri.
He's so shifty.
Right. Bob's he got is balls. So shifty. Let's do a little Elise. Are you ready to hit it? Ragu bagu.
Did it, did it, did it.
Ragu.
Did it, did it, did it.
Bagu.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Rag Guys Talk Bad Guys, the podcast within a podcast where we rank the villains of the Conjuring Cinematic Universe, or the Cuckoo, as we call it. Before we get into the official main event ranking them, let's do, of course, Best Scare. This is unranked, and we want to figure out what the best scare of this movie was. So far, our best scores, our scares look like this. The fucking clap from The Conjuring. The girl to crazy woman in the doorway in Annabelle. The nun to hallway to the painting in Conjuring 2. The sheet ghost in bunk beds in Annabelle Creation. The hands in the casket and the silver spoon in The Nun. And then, of course, the car in La Llorona. What are we thinking is the best scare of Annabelle Comes Home?
One that sticks out is the dad for me.
Yeah. That is what I was thinking.
Where they're playing the Twinkle Twinkle Little Star, and then he's like, I got blood on my face. You know?
Like, that was a good one. That was a good one. Because you knew something was going to happen. I wasn't sure what it was going to be. And then he shows up peacefully, and then he gets crazy.
I will say the other thing that I found inventive, there's two things that shots that I remember. One, everything with Daniela and the TV I thought was really inventive.
Yes.
I was like, this is a cool way to kind of do the, I'm looking over my shoulder multiple times. So I thought that was pretty cool. And then, just a shout out to this one scene where the other babysitter is getting kind of haunted by the ferryman, and she looks over and she just sees two dots. And then as she gets closer, the dots where that you think are going to be the guy's eyes are just coins that just fall down. I'm like, oh, that's pretty cool.
I think the ferryman for me is, I think he's probably the best scare. He was just creepy. And like, you know what I mean? When he pulls her in, you have to have the flashlight to stop him. And even when she's going down the hallway and he's doing the behind her, like, I like the ferryman a lot.
I think this movie, again, like for the fifth time, has the most good scares that we've had so far, because I think the Lorraine scare in the beginning is really good. Like the Warren scare of the buildup of the map all the way to him almost getting hit by the car. Multiple shit there that was like jump scare scary. But like the real earned scares, I agree with what you guys are talking about. Like I think the hallway scene with the ferryman is the most deserving for this movie, because it is the longest with the most like buildup of like, oh fuck, we know a scare is coming, and then the scare actually delivers, and there's multiple scares. It's the guy behind, which is scary, the coins dropping, which is scary, like, and then her confronting herself, and like the way it like waits before it like does the scream. The scream itself, not the scariest thing, sure. But I think that overall that was like a very well done horror scene. And I think the TV scene was just excellent. Like yeah. Not necessarily the scariest thing ever, but like it is something I haven't ever seen in horror before, of seeing your future and it's still being scary when things happen a little bit differently. So it's like, I want to give a major shout out to that. I don't know if I can, I just want to put this as it's the scariest movie, but I still think The Clap is number one.
Okay. Well, we don't rank them, but it's unranked, so.
I do like, by the way, that when she was trapped in the room, my first thought was, dude, after like fucking 5 minutes of this, I would be curled up in the corner crying to myself. And sure enough, like 5 minutes later, there's just a shot of her curled up in the corner crying to herself. Like,
which makes that room scarier. Mm-hmm.
And I was like, that makes it way scarier, because I think the last movie, everyone just sort of reacted to stuff, but they were like, it's going to be okay. Like, it's like a goldfish. It's done. I don't remember any of it. I'm totally fine. There's my toy. Mm-hmm. And in this one, I'm like, this would be traumatizing. This would have an added effect over and over and over again as you got more scared that eventually you wouldn't be able to deal with it. And I like that finally we got that shot in this movie.
I want to pose a question for everyone here and not take up too much time. Is the TV a haunted artifact?
Yeah,
it is. Because we've talked about this before, how every single time they go, they solve a case, they never get paid, and they just take their compensation in the form of haunted artifacts, right? Payment. So do it's you like... think that they just walked in, saw the place, Ed saw that TV and said, that's a TV. He's like, we should take that with us. And then he just picked it up and just walked out of the place with the TV.
Football
and,
on yeah, Sundays
set it down. He just hangs out there. That's his funny. Man cave.
That's a great maybe. Concept.
Maybe. Scarier.
Maybe.
All right, so now it's time for the main event, the best baddie in the coup. Right now, the rankings look like this. Number one is Valak in Conjuring 2. Number two is Annabelle's Demon in Annabelle Creation. Number three is Bathsheba in The Conjuring. Number four is Annabelle's Demon in Annabelle. Number five is The Nun in The Nun. And number six is La Llorona. Where are we putting Annabelle in her third at bat here?
Well, is it Annabelle or is it like the ferryman, the feely meely board game?
Samurai armor.
All that happen. Right? Annabelle's the is that that's if I can get in here for a second and really please confuse do. Everything.
Great.
Annabelle, Judy says Annabelle's the one making all this happen. When they put Annabelle away and close it up, everything stops. So everything is Annabelle's demon, right? The way I understood the Warren's blessed room is, of course, all these objects were cursed. But we beat the demon or whatever it is that was attached to them, and now they are all in here just to be kept safe, yada, 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 yada. So is it the ferryman? Is it the dress? Is it the thing? Or is it Annabelle just reaching out and being like, I am a bad demon, and I know all this shit, and I'm going to use it the way it was used before. Prey off what they know about things. That right? That's what's happening. Yeah, right?
Yeah, that makes sense.
So I think that alone... These are the most strings Annabelle's ever pulled. This is the most theatrical she's really ever been. I think she's got to go number one because she's she's out there spinning plates left and right. She's all over the place.
So I just feel like, though, this movie was just not nearly as terrifying as Annabelle Creation. I just feel like that movie took it to a fucking another level with the scares. And like, I just think it was a better directed film, and Annabelle was creepier in that. In this one, it just felt like it was almost like Loki, like kind of playing pranks on people and having a good time. But eventually, you know, it just didn't feel like the stakes were as high as they were in that second movie, because I didn't really feel like anyone was really at, I thought it was just like messing with people, you know, like what was the end result? Like, they kept saying it wants your soul, but we never get to that. Then we don't have that same payoff like we have, and I say payoff loosely, because the first Annabelle, we see Alfred Woodard have to like jump off the thing, and they're like, well, I guess she's dead. But in this one, it's like, I don't know, it just feels like this thing kind of
is,
yeah. In this one, it's just kind of like, I don't know. It just didn't feel as scary as that second one. So I can't put Annabelle above that movie in any good conscience.
Yeah, it didn't have, I think it's part of it is that scares are subjective. So things are scarier just to people that are not as scary to other people. And so there's stuff like the old man in the chair from the Conjuring 2 that just so creepy to me. But, you know, samurai armor or the dad, the blood is, you know, to me that feels more like a jump scare. It's not really giving me this feeling.
I guess that's the thing is, I think we're coming at this from different angles, which of course I love, because that's the show can be any angle you want it to be. But it's best beastie.
So it's not who are the best scares. I'm giving Annabelle credit for fucking pulling all this shit off, having werewolves made out of smoke and all sorts of crap. I'm not saying
for me, it's background priest. I wish we had gotten to see him do something cool or not.
I'm with you in the sense that like this movie has a couple like failed elements of the Beasties, where we have the samurai, which I don't even want to say is failed. It just kind of like didn't really do much. It did fine, I guess. But the werewolf sucked. But everything, all the other ones were pretty good.
So we're
good.
Going by Annabelle being the puppet master.
There's the demon, right?
Compared to all the beasties of the movie, I think the nun has equally, or not the nun, Conjuring 2 has like equally like whatever elements to it with the rickety man or the crooked man. It's like, that stuff doesn't pay off either. It's like there's always, none of these movies are just flawless with their cast of villains. Mm-hmm. And I think this one has more good ones than that.
Going with what Greg says, I feel like I still think that Valak stands as being a terrifying look, great scares, and is the overall threatening presence for arguably the whole franchise in a lot of ways. Yeah,
and there's just something about Lorraine Warren's relationship with Valak that also empowers Valak to feel scarier to me. But yeah, Annabelle was.
You're making a great point that I think Valak is the overall package, perhaps. Mm-hmm. Valak and Conjuring 2, overall package. Annabelle, congratulations.
You're doing work,
and we applaud you for that. But overall, Valak's chasing her down.
Even Annabelle Creation, scarier movie, but Annabelle what? Summons a scarecrow? That's it, and gets old Mitch McConnell hands for a little bit and pushes someone into a barn? Like. Yeah. That like other than, like so in terms of the work, the effortfulness, that was a young, impressionable Annabelle that hadn't really honed their craft. This is Annabelle working overtime. So I would feel comfortable for me. I would put Annabelle at number two under Valak from this movie.
That's fair.
I'll take that. That's a happy compromise.
Okay. I also think when the demon shows up, the demon, you see more of the demon than you do in other movies, but I think they did some stuff to make it real scary. There's a couple points where it like looks and moves in very unnatural ways. And I was like, okay, because if we're lingering on this demon, I want it to be scary. And it actually did do a pretty good job moving quick and like showing up at inopportune times and just being generally scary looking. That's how I feel.
It's fair. There you go. Number two then. So Valak stays from Conjuring 2 at number one. Annabelle and Annabelle comes home, gets to number two.
We do not have any haiku and reviews for Annabelle. Come home.
Stop.
That's a shame.
Hammer time.
So unless, and I think Elise, you might need to still hit it.
Yeah, I need to hear it once. I look forward to this all week.
Seven syllables in the middle. Five for the first and last line. If you're not poetic, don't need to fret it. Haikus don't need to rhyme. Haiku in review. Haiku in review. Everybody knows that.
There you go. Leave a comment below with your haiku in review.
Hold on.
You got to clap it out first.
I think. No, you were doing such a good job. We just let it go. That, acapella.
That feely-meely, much scarier than Black Shuck. But no fairy man.
There we go. To patreon.com/kindoffunny just like you can. Now it is time to rank the Conjuring Cinematic Universe. Currently number one, The Conjuring. Number two, Annabelle Creation. Number three, The Conjuring 2. Number four, The Nun. Number five, The Curse of La Llorona. And number six, Annabelle 1.
I definitely think this is better than Annabelle 1 and The Curse of La Llorona.
Can you share this doc with me so I can see him? I can't.
Yeah, it's hard to remember.
So last time we established the tiers, we talked about how there's clearly two tiers to this franchise. Yeah. There's some that people put that extra work into, and there's other ones that feel like kind of like cash grabs.
Yeah.
If I recall, The Nun, Annabelle, and La Llorona were the lower tier, and everything else was higher tier.
Mm-hmm.
For me, I would put this in the higher tier, but I don't know that
bottom of the higher tier.
I don't know that I would put it above Conjuring 2 or Annabelle Creation overall as a film. Though I think it deserves credit of being definitely a higher tiered Conjuring movie. That's my thoughts.
I'm willing to
listen to arguments, concerns.
No, see, I'm in agreement with James. I enjoyed this more than The Nun. but not as much as The Conjuring 2. So I think I would put this right smack dab in the middle of this list, which is right above The Nun, below Conjuring 2.
Can you put it in Slack? I have no idea how to get the chat back in Discord.
It's just tough because I do think that some of these movies are just made better.
Oh, sure.
And that shines through. Like Annabelle Creation, I think if it wasn't made as well, we would. I don't think we'd be having this discussion about its quality. Like, because it's good. It's good. But it's made so well. And
you're still right, man. Like Annabelle Creation and The Conjuring 1, I think in particular, are made better than this movie is. I just think this movie does a lot of the rest of the things better. So I'd put it at number one, which obviously is not going to be, which is fine. I just think that you're right that Annabelle Creation was a better made movie.
Yeah.
But this just like for all the aspects that I'm looking for watching a Conjuring movie, like characters I care about, scares that I care about, like building into the lore that we've seen before, like following rules within its own movie and standing alone as just if it was its own thing, I would put that as number one because of those things.
See, I think this movie has a lot of really, really good components to it. I think the acting, I think the casting was good. I think the acting's good. They have a great chemistry together. And I think it's actually shot fairly well. Like I think the image quality itself looks pretty beautiful and you're in it. I just think that it just never, I think the movie is just at odds with itself. It's two different movies trying to fight each other. One is like a young adult coming of age story that should be spooky and kind of scary. Another one's like a hardcore horror movie. And it doesn't work that well for me. That's why I think it has to go middle of the road. Cause The Conjuring 2 is fucking scary. That is a scary movie. There was like, and Annabelle Creation to me.
Name one scare in Conjuring 2, Nick.
What's that?
Name a scare in Conjuring 2.
The freaking fire, the little fire truck thing coming out. It was just creepy as shit. all the stuff with the water downstairs, like all that stuff was super scary where he has to go into the water and you're like, oh my God, this thing's going to kill him. Like,
he finds them teeth down there too.
To me, the ambience is just like you're tense throughout the entire movie. Whereas in this one, there wasn't an underlying tension. You're just like, you're watching these people do these things. Oh, that's a scary thing that happened. And then oh, this is a fantastical thing. And oh, he's getting, I guess, chased by a smoke monster outside. And again, I'm not saying there weren't scares in this movie. I just think start to finish The Conjuring 2, Annabelle Creation, and The Conjuring had that tone that I think elevated those into like the upper echelon of fucking horror movies. Like those are horror movies to me. To me, this one is not, it didn't quite get there. And it's just a tonal shift. I enjoyed watching it though. And I wish there was more of it, but I just don't think it's as scary as like, when I think of Conjuring movies, I think this is going to terrify me and it's going to keep me up at night. And in this one, I'm like, hey, this is nice. A good little story about some people coming together and trying to figure out how to deal with a bully. Oh yeah. Also, there's some demons.
So now it's time to rank the Conjuring universe, cinematic universe. Who thinks it's better than Annabelle? Raise your hand. We all raise our hand. Who thinks it's better than The Curse of La Llorona? Raise your hand. Who thinks it's better than The Nun? Raise your hand. We all raise our hand so far. Who thinks it's better than Conjuring 2? Raise your hand. And there you have it. Second. Just me and Greg raise our hands, which means
two people with taste, me and Tim. Wait, I want to know. This show
I want to know how far you would have gone.
Yeah, months. I want to hear how far I would have gone for Greg.
I would have put it right below The Conjuring. I would have put it below The Conjuring, well, above Annabelle Creation.
And number two.
Okay. Wow.
I would have put it in number two.
I think that I totally get that, and I totally understand that.
That's your opinion, man.
I respect it. I get it because I really think at this point it's not math, right? This is a total just like what you want to get out of it aspect of it, and that's the only difference in terms of what I think the quality, quote unquote, is between this kind of upper echelon of these movies. So
the rankings now are number one, The Conjuring; number two, Annabelle Creation; number three, The Conjuring 2; number four, Annabelle Comes Home; number five, The Nun; number six, The Curse of La Llorona; and number seven, Annabelle. There you have it, everybody. Wow. We will return one day for The Conjuring, The Devil Made Me Do It. But next week, everyone, we're going to continue Batman in review with Lego Batman, the movie, and then finally, I know we've all been itching for it. Greg, I know you more than anyone are excited for this. We are returning for the final time to the X-Men Cinematic Universe.
What?
The New Mutants, baby. It's
Greg, I got you Wolverine costume, and I'm also going to be Wolverine.
Beautiful. Let's all get Wolverine costumes.
Have you guys done X-Men 3 Last Stand?
I mean, they obviously
dang it. I love that movie, unapologetically.
Oh, Delise, I love you. Where can people find you guys?
You can find us both on Twitter at James Willems.
Elise Willems.
You can find us making stuff for ourselves at youtube.com/JamesWillemsStuff. But if you want to see us basically every single day, you can go to youtube.com/funhouse.
Thank you guys so much for having us do this. It's a real pleasure and fun time.
No, we love having you guys.
We enjoy it so much.
Yeah, this is what we do. Thank you guys.
You're welcome literally anytime. We will be doing franchises till the end of time. So if anything you want to do, just let us know.
Weekend at Bernie's in review.
I'll do that with you all day long. 2 weeks straight.
Next time.
Greg.
The devil made me do it.